Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are going to have a special guest on with us today, Reginald Clemens, who will talk about the injustice that he has been subjected to and his consecutive life sentences, his hardships, and his achievements throughout the past 29 years he's thus far been incarcerated. We also have on with us a longtime advocate, Madeline Colburn, who most of you may know. She's been well known throughout the country for her advocacy work as well. And she has been working with Reggie Clemens. So, Madeline, would you like to speak a little bit on Reginald before he does come on with us?
Yes, basically I just want the people to know, based upon how his case has gone in the 29 years here in Missouri, it's basically a botched case. There's a lot of erroneous things that has taken place within his case in the city of St. Louis, from the court system to the prosecutorial misconduct, which the prosecutor, Neil Moss, is no longer here. He passed away of 2015, but his penmanship of letter writing is still alive, and it's keeping not only Reginald Byron Clemens behind bars wrongfully, but others that I am involved with throughout the state of Missouri that has been wrongfully convicted. So Reginald can better tell his story best, but the main thing I want people to focus on is the infallacies, the lies that caused a young man at the age of 19 to be put into a position that he had to be coerced, beaten, and other things that came along with it in regards to how they handled the case to get him to give a confession. So Reginald will tell his story, and I just hope that people will listen and get an understanding of how things have turned out, because it's an onion case. It's a RICO case. It's a botched case that needs justice.
And you know, Madeline, you've been referring others to me, and a lot of them have been listening in on the Judy Pickens case and also on the Bertha Owens case, which we will be interviewing Bertha next week. But you have been working with a lot of these individuals who have been wrongfully convicted, and that's a major issue in this country, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, I even look at what is being happening now that has been an executive order with the FIRST Act. I know that's a federal level, but that in itself lets you know the way that this country has gone about dealing with mass incarceration with people of color. It doesn't matter if you've done the crime or not. I mean, I think about Emmett Till and so many others, the Central Park Five, you know, and just Reginald and himself. I can speak truth to power because I'm in Missouri. I've worked with his mother, Vera Thomas, and his family in regards to helping his release. But for whatever reason, because of
free
the lies,
call, press
buried,
2. If you would like to permanently block your number from receiving calls from this facility, press 6.
Now we have Reginald coming on.
To accept this
free
call, press 1. To refuse this free call, press 2. If you would like to permanently block your number from receiving calls from this facility, press 6.
Now this is a problem because he's trying to get through.
Did you press 1?
Yes. But you know what? He's calling in on the radio show.
What number did he have? He's calling me now. Let me click him in. Hold on.
Okay, thanks.
Click him in the radio show. Hold on.
Madeline is bringing Reginald Clemens on.
Station.
Reginald, go ahead. You're on the phone with Leona.
Hello, how are you
Hello,
doing?
Hello, Reginald. Can
yes,
you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Okay, Madeline was just briefing us a little bit about your situation, and we were talking about the wrongfully convicted as well. So Reginald, first of all, I'd like to introduce Reginald Clements. He is on the line with us now. He is on the radio show. And, Reginald, would you like to talk a little bit about your situation and maybe a little bit about yourself before you really get into the rest of it?
Yes. As you know, my name is Reginald Clements. I was on death row from 1993 up until 2015. I fought to against police brutality on my case, and I got a lot of help and a lot of prayers and support to expose police corruption in my case and prosecutorial misconduct in my case, where the prosecutor hid evidence and threatened witnesses into not coming forward and testifying, and threatened witnesses into destroying evidence in the form of reports and everything, as well as the prosecutor altered police reports in order to cover up evidence. So that's what it was that got me off of death row. And right now, I'm still fighting against the police brutality situation in my case. And I plan on giving the award money to the from whatever lawsuit, settlement, or whatever trial is held. I plan on giving the money to the victim's family. And that's to bring things full circle in the case in order to try and hold others accountable, the police accountable for the police brutality that has already been established. It has already been established in a court ruling that the police did, in fact, beat me. And that's one of the things that I'm fighting against. And the other thing is where the prosecutor, because they're still being vindictive and they're upset that I did expose the corruption and the police brutality, so they're depriving me and refusing to acknowledge 23 years of time that I've done, which also goes towards justice reform issues when it comes to people abusing their power and using the power to keep people incarcerated well beyond the time that the law allows us, that's judicially required. And I've just completed a motion to try and rectify and correct the situation.
Reggie, I was wondering if you could just go back a little bit. We're talking about the injustice, but could you speak about the consecutive life terms, how you ended up in prison in the first place? You mentioned any funding or any monies from the lawsuit, but what is the lawsuit about in order for you to be donating it or contributing it to the family, the victim's family? Can you explain a little bit about that so that the audience can get some kind of an understanding on where this case initiated, how it became, and then the injustice?
Well, a lot of people locally in Missouri would know the case as the Justice for Reggie case, or the Chain of Rocks Bridge case, because the campaign on my case is called Justice for Reggie. And then the case is known as the Chain of Rocks Bridge case. And it's a case where two girls were unfortunately raped and murdered, and their cousin was forced to jump from the bridge. I'm a co-defendant in the case, and I fought to prove my innocence where I did not kill anybody, and I tried to stop the murders. But the police beat me into a confession.
Okay,
and
that's
it is for that reason. Yes, and it's for that reason that I plan on giving the money to the victim's family.
Okay.
And I ended up receiving the death penalty in 1993 because of the prosecutor being overzealous and it being corrupt, and his overall goal was to get us, get a lot of that, and there is a racial disparity in the case. And that's how I ended up on death row instead of ending up with a second-degree murder in the first place.
Your situation is not much different than a lot of these wrongful convictions and these incidents that happen around the country with the prosecutional, misconduct and with tampering of evidence, coercion, beatings. And this is something that happens on an ongoing basis throughout the country. And this is why I'm glad that you are on the show to talk more about it, because people need to know. The media reports one-sided stories, and it's usually on benefits the prosecution or whoever on that side, but it never allows for people to know the truth from the defendant side. So, and you have an hour, so just finish what you were talking about.
Yes, and in that vein, I would like to encourage someone to go and look at my case and understand that the uniqueness of my case is the opportunity that I was blessed with, and I thank God for it, to expose the corruption in the case. Because a lot of people wonder, why would a prosecutor target you? Who are you supposed to be that a prosecutor would target? Well, prosecutors are politicians as well. And they also are seeking to advance their career to judgeships, and there's judges that are state judges who are trying to become federal judges. So there's an upward momentum that they can gain from increasing their level of prosecutions and getting bogus prosecutions. And then police officers get promotions to higher rank for levels and degrees of prosecutions that they help support. And that's where the corruption comes in, because the ambition, it's not justice. Well, my situation, what has been unique is an opportunity to expose the corruption, because they were so corrupt that initially they beat the victim, Thomas Cummins, into a confession. So they didn't just beat everybody into a confession. They didn't stop with the suspects, but they also beat the victim into a confession. So in that way, it set the stage for the corruption to be exposed. And no, that's something that the prosecutor edited out of the police report and tried to destroy all the evidence and remnants of the police brutality in the case. But that's not unique to my situation, because a lot of people get beaten by the police, and then the prosecuting attorneys cover it up in order to maintain some type of productive relationship. Well, that's a counterproductive relationship when it comes to the implementation of justice, because it doesn't bring about a just outcome. It brings about an unjust outcome. And then prosecutors try to put defendants away for the rest of their life, especially when they're black or brown people or minorities, poor people, because it is not just dealing with race, but it's also dealing with financial capacity to defend yourself. And I don't have the resources to take on the whole state of Missouri and the finances that are given to the prosecuting attorney. And that's where it's given me a lot of, made me take pause, give thought to what could be done to rectify the situation. And those are the things that I kind of lean towards now, and I look at in hindsight on, what can I do now? And I don't have an attorney to help me with this lawsuit against for police brutality. But the evidence is already there, and the evidence is clear.
I'd like to speak a little on that as far as attorneys go, because there are attorneys who will, with celebrities, with athletes, with anyone with money, attorneys will take those cases because they make an awful lot of money off of these people. There are so many indigent prisoners throughout the country that do have the same problem as you're speaking of now, is trying to get legal help from lawyers. There are also a lot of lawyers out there that are corrupt that will take your money and do nothing or very little. So these are issues, another issues, in addition to the penal system issues and problems. The attorneys, I don't say they're all you know, corrupt. I don't say they're all inappropriate, but there are a lot of attorneys that even are connected in some way with the Department of Corrections across the country, and they actually sell out the prisoners they're supposed to be representing. So this is a major issue with attorneys, too, and trying to find an attorney for someone that's indigent. Another thing I was going to mention as well is that the attorneys these days, they're almost like afraid to go up against the Department of Corrections or any prosecution because of the unions. The guards unions are so powerful now, and attorneys are more or less leaving and going the other way, you know, with bankruptcy cases and you know, non-prison-related cases. And so I wanted you, before the show ends today as well, is to let the audience know how they can help in some way. There are some lawyers out there that may be listening in on this that may be willing to help in some way. And so you may want to, you know, give more information about that.
Yes. Well, again, my name is Reginald Clemens. There's information on the website, justicefreereggieclemens.com. That's www.freereggieclemens.com. And when it comes to the deals and everything that are made, when it comes with people who are poor and who don't have the resources in order to hire private attorneys that will have an entire firm behind them, yes, we do get swapped out, and there are deals that are made. And what I would really like to do is hopefully get up out of here and someday begin to contribute to helping with people getting attorneys that can deal with these issues with police brutality and raise money and do speaking engagements, what it is that I've been through with the justice system, and go into greater detail and having a Q&A where people can ask me questions and I can answer whatever questions they have. I've been living through 28 years of incarceration, and 23 of those years was on death row. And I've seen guards kill inmates and starve inmates to death on food strikes and give promotions in the end. But nobody wants to look at these things. I've seen guards assault inmates and then charge inmates for assault on staff. And there's nothing that's done about it, and there's a hopelessness that you feel because the courts have turned a blind eye to prisoners' rights. And the media doesn't put these things out there because the narrative is not profitable, and it's not something that they claim people are interested in hearing. Well, if you don't let people know about it, then they won't be interested in hearing about what you don't tell them. And that's also a level of corruption. When the prison industrial complex has its hooks in the financial markets, and that's where, under the law, all contracts with the prison system and all of the prison's finances are supposed to be published on the internet, are supposed to be publicly available. And I believe that a push to make those funds and those transactions and the financial records publicly available will bring about a light and truth and justice and a lot of justice reform within the criminal justice system when it's no longer profitable to beat people. And we'll cut down on prosecutorial misconduct is if all the evidence from cases were turned over to a neutral party, such as the circuit attorney's office. That would cut down on Brady violations massively. Because if the circuit clerk was to collect all the evidence, then the evidence would be held by a neutral party, and the prosecuting attorney wouldn't be able to hide evidence that's turned over by the police. It'd be harder for police to cover up police brutality if they had to turn evidence over to the clerk's office. And that fund, that'd just be a matter of transferring funds and changing the funds over to the circuit clerk's office instead of giving that money to the prosecuting attorney's office to extend and exasperate corruption in our criminal justice system. If people are going to be serious about criminal justice reform, I've lived it. I've experienced it, and I've analyzed it top to bottom. And it's rooted in my gut, and I'm here, and I'm ready to speak out. I want
to help
fighting against, yes.
There are so many other prisoners that need a voice, too. And that's sad, because what you're talking about with the abuses and the deprivations in the prisons, it happened right here in Massachusetts, you know, in Sousa Baranowski Correctional Center. They say that some of the prisoners attacked a guard, and a couple of others stepped in. Guards stepped in, and they there was a riot. Following that riot, they closed the prison down, and an unprovoked attack on all prisoners, and prisoners that had nothing to do with it. Someone had mentioned that the guard that was attacked was a guard that was provoking prisoners, and they had asked that guard be removed, and they were told they'd have to deal with it. The guard wasn't going to be removed, so they took it upon themselves. But what you're talking about in the prisons, the abuses that go on in the prisons, and they've done their own internal investigations in a lot of these prisons when things have happened like that. But I also understand for many prisoners across the country, and some have even seen the internal investigators joking and laughing with the prison officials and guards. So, as you say, they're not really going in to do a sincere investigation. They're going in just to justify the things that are going on, and most likely they're going to go on the side of the Department of Corrections rather than the ones that are really being abused.
Well, that's what happens in a lot of cases when it comes to minority and poor people, is that investigations are initiated with a predetermined outcome. The investigation isn't there to serve the purpose of bringing about justice or introduce evidence to be analyzed and sift through to see whether or not anyone needs to be held accountable. The investigations are initiated in order to whitewash the situation and whitewash the facts and extrapolate the record in a way that makes things look good according to whatever the predetermined outcome is. And that's what happens when you have former corrections officers acting as prison investigators. While saying they have alliances and fraternal instincts in order to support the blue code of silence and everything that still exists to this day. And it's transferred over to the prison administration. And if we're going to be honest about justice reform, we have to be honest about the reality of the circumstances. I'm not looking to strike out at staff. I'm not looking to strike out at police or anything like that because, for the most part, they take these jobs seriously, and they take these jobs with an open and whole heart. It's when they get in these jobs positions that some of them end up becoming corrupted by the corrupt system and the pressures within the system to protect the financial interests of the system. And that's why that we have to expose the financial interests as well as the corruption that's costing people their lives. I've been locked up since before the internet started, since 1991, before people had cell phones. I'm saying I have two grandsons. There's things that have gone on and taken place in these 30 years that it seemed like they snubbed their nose at 30 years of time that has passed. I was 19 when I got locked up. I'm going to be 50 in 2 years. But
you know, Madeline had mentioned mass incarceration, and this is something the prison reform, this is something that people are talking about with this prison reform goals, and people that have been locked up for 20 years or more, or 25 years or more, This is where they need to start looking at releasing them to decrease the mass incarceration. Because as you said, you went in before the internet. There's so much that has happened throughout the years. And maturity, the age maturity, you know, once you get to be a certain age and the responsibility, these are some of the issues. And Madeline, if you could just briefly talk a little bit about what you were talking about earlier with mass incarceration.
Well, what I see, Leona, just not in Reginald's case, but being involved with chaplaincy in the Missouri Department of Corrections for the last 27 years, I can attest to not only what Reginald is saying, but I myself have been involved with a lot of other cases throughout the state of Missouri, Eastern region, on behalf of inmates trying to state their plea because of the abstracts and the errors that have been found and noted and annotated in their case that have chosen to be ignored. And these are some of the things that I was trying to work with Senator Dick Durbin out of Illinois. He was over the Judicial Watch Committee up in Washington, D.C., to let it be known about what is going on in Missouri prisons, as well as others that were talking about what was happening in their prospective states. With Reginald's case, is such an example of how mass incarceration is botched and being overlooked and not having oversight of integrity reform programs to be able to take a look at what it is, such as Reginald's case, to see exactly what is taking place within the circuit attorney's office and how the police department operate as far as pattern of practices. And this has become a concern even with our circuit attorney here in the city of St. Louis, first African-American female, Kim Gardner. She's looking to do the criminal justice reform, and she's getting hell by the white counterparts, the police department, the police association, the mayor. These are all people that are coming up against her trying to do her job effectively, but she's coming against opposition because of such. And so there's a lot of people that are behind her in helping to move forward with the reform, where I foresee, and this is where I will continue to advocate on Reginald Clemens' behalf, Bertha Owens, Judy Pickens, Frederico Lowe, Clarence Taylor, and others here in Missouri that I know for a fact have come up out of the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office with prosecutorial misconduct, with the unethical practices that has been allowed for decades in that office under Jennifer Joyce and D. Joyce Haynes former administration. So these are some of the things that I have concern as being a chaplain, working with families here in Missouri, helping the release of their loved ones that have been wrongfully incarcerated, and actually helping to change laws, like I'm working right now with Representative Neely on House Bill 2254. That is an actual prison term requirement that needs to be looked into because it's only right now stated towards the white counterparts, Caucasian. And we need it to be an equality exodus bill in regards to all men and women that are incarcerated under that particular bill and its requirements. The last thing I want to say, just to make a correction so that people can find Mr. Reginald Clemens' website, I would ask that people go to www.freereggieclemensnow.wordpress.com. Again, I'll give that before I get off the line. That is www.freereggieclemensnow.com. That's how you'll be able to see everything archived that is on Reginald's website. We stopped at 2017, me and a particular advocate that was working real hard to make sure that his story was told and not the infallacies that people want to believe about his situation, knowing that this is an innocent man that is trying to get back to his family.
Thank you, Madeline. Thank you very much. And also, after this interview, the audience can find the interview on the internet just by typing Reginald Clemens interview, and it will play all over again for anyone that's interested. And Reggie, you will be back on with us tomorrow. But I just wanted to say, in giving some hope, is that with the prison reform goals and the mass incarceration in this country, there is hope that soon that you will be released, because they're looking at prisoners who have served a long time like yourself. Also the compassionate release, which a lot of people are working on. And hopefully we will have politicians that will be leaders and not followers, because there is going to be some resistance to what the plan is to try to release prisoners rather than have them serve a life sentence. And again, people have gone over to countries like Germany and the Netherlands and places like that where their whole entire criminal justice system is different. The maximum that anyone serves is 25 years, and the facilities themselves are not like they are here. They're more humane. So these are some of the issues that this country needs to take the lead in as well, because they cannot keep pleasing two masters. And what happens is a lot of politicians, they want to please their constituents, but they also know what's going on in the prisons and with the prisoners is inhumane and unfair. So let's hope that, especially I looked at your consecutive life terms, and the normal person, if lucky, if blessed at all to be alive after the age of 90, how in the world can people be serving consecutive life sentences? 400 and 500 and 600, 700 years. This is the way it's so failing. It's failing so much. But anyway, I'm sorry to take the scene away from you, Reggie. If you'd like to go on with this, I'd appreciate it.
It's about all of us. It's not just about me. And that's one of the reasons I'm saying I try to keep the fight away from being about me and the struggle from being just about me. I hope that I speak on things of substance and that I work towards actionable plans that where we can engage. That's why I have this lawsuit pending, and it's a substantial lawsuit. It's a $2 million lawsuit. And I would love for an attorney to step in or an organization to step up and help me with this lawsuit when the outcome is an amicable outcome, when the outcome is a just outcome, and whatever the settlement is, whatever money there is, will be given to the victim's family. So my interest is justice. My interest is redemption. And my interest is to make a contribution to make the world a better place than what I found it. And I'm saying I've made some mistakes when I was 19, or a horrible mistake when I was 19. And I greatly apologize for that. And I've fought back to a sense of my humanity. But through this fight, I did not get any help from the justice system. I did not get any help from the Department of Corrections in my rehabilitation. Any rehabilitation that a prisoner requires within the American judicial process is wholly of his own accord. It's not something, and the opportunity is sometimes made available, but for the most part, you have to fight for your own rehabilitation. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak out, and I look forward to speaking again and going into greater detail about anything that people might have questions about, whatever questions might arise. I would love to answer them someday in the future.
Okay. I know there's so much that's going on in these prisons today, and a lot of prisoners, they don't talk about it. They really don't, because of the, the retaliation. But I can say honestly that prisoners see a lot that goes on in these prisons, and there's a lot of beatings, there's a lot of injustices going on behind those bars. And unfortunately, again, the media doesn't get involved. They seem, for some reason, they seem like they're benefiting more by always taking the one side, whether it be with law enforcement, whether it be with the prison officials, guards, or whatever it might be. And this is sad, because the media reporting a lot of times is reporting false information, as they say, fake news sometimes. And that fake news or false information that they're giving out is fatal to it's injustice to the individuals that are being accused, whether those individuals are innocent, whether they are guilty first time, or if they are guilty at all. There's always a story, and I tell people this all the time. There's always two sides and sometimes three sides to every story. And the media needs to allow for prisoners to be able to tell their stories. And this is something they should be doing too, is going into the prisons. They need to be going into the prisons and meeting with the prisoners rather than just listening to these one-sided stories.
And I think a lot of times it has a lot to do with the adversarial relationship that is cultivated by the prosecution, by the police. It's seen as something that's helpful to their investigation and prosecution of the case. But at the end of the day, the end game, since they want to call it a game, the end game should be truth and reconciliation. The end game should be healing our society and figuring out and understanding what it is that brought a person to their criminal behavior, what it is that brought a person to who they are, so that we can prevent those circumstances. Instead of trying to build pipelines to prison and how to create a greater ballooning, more profitable prison population, where you have people in wheelchairs and housing units full of people with wheelchairs, because that's what's happening to prisoners that have received these life and 50 sentences and these excessive sentences, is you have a wheelchair program in the prison where it's basically old folks' home within the prison instead of redeeming souls, redeeming circumstances, and helping victims to heal and creating a situation where it's not so adversarial, but it's about reclaiming our humanity.
Exactly. I don't believe in prisons myself because, as I say all the time, we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. We have an epidemic of addictions, and we live in a very vengeful country. We live in a very hateful, racist country, and it's not about seeing these people rehabilitated. It's about vengeance, or it's about brutality, because they know they can get away with it, and this is unfortunate. I believe that they should have residential treatment programs long-term, maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years, of residential treatment programs for the mentally ill, and residential treatment programs for the addicted, and residential treatment programs for the anger management. You know, these are situations where they need to have all of these categories separated and in different facilities, facilities where they're going to be corrected, rehabilitated, and released. In the Department of Corrections, it's not the Department of Corrections anymore. It's the Department of Corruptions around the country. And this is sad, because here we are paying taxes to have something positive done with the incarcerated, and these tax, the dollars are going into all these different areas of brutality. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
And it arises, some politicians, they do not believe in democracy or empowerment of the people. Hypocrisy is their democracy. They're in politics for selfish gain. I don't say that that's true of all career politicians, because there are some career politicians, through their experience and knowledge of how to maneuver and push the ball forward, have been able to kick the can down the road and get some things done when it comes to reform with the medical system, Medicare system, and different things. But they need to put those efforts towards justice reform. Because, you know, when you look at the economics of it, let's look at that and look at how we're not going to be able to tax our way out of this situation and competing in the open market. And the drain of the prison system does not create exportable goods, period. When you look at the economic perspectives of the possibility of prison generating a profit for the country as a whole, it is worse than welfare. So anybody that's against welfare should be against the prison system as well. But because of the emotional content of how the politicians who make a profit from the prison system sales pitch the prison system to society and cater to people's fears, that's what allow all the abuse to take place. That's what encourages people to turn the other way, away from the abuse, so that they can turn a profit. And that's one of the saddest things about the prison system. And again, that's why I say that to expose truth of the corruption, we need to make sure that all the financial records of the prison system are exposed or made publicly available. It's a tax-funded organization. It's a governmental entity that does not deserve, that is not supposed to have the secrecy of the CIA. The prison system is supposed to be a public entity, a public agency. And as
you mentioned politicians, and I have to say from my own experiences, there's a politician right here in Massachusetts who called the prison, one of the prisons, on behalf of a prisoner to find out what was going on. He was lied to. The prisoner was being detained in solitary for months and months and months, and they told this politician that the prisoner was in general population. The politician found out that they were lying, and when the family member asked that politician to put that in writing, he refused to do it. They mentioned it on the phone, but they refused to put it in writing. And this is a politician, a state rep in Massachusetts. And this is another politician where the family was asking this politician to please go in and check on an individual. This went on for 2 years. This politician to this day would not respond when they got the email. Recently, there was a politician that was very sympathetic of the family, and she said she would do everything she could to help that young man. And this is the difference between politicians. We have corrupt politicians who people don't even know that they're corrupt because they haven't had that experience. But not only in Massachusetts, I'm sure, but in other states, but I myself have experienced some of the politicians in Massachusetts. And one of these days, their names will be revealed. But right now, these politicians, rather than to knowing that these prisoners are being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, or whatever it might be, they're just ignoring it. So this is why when the media sees that the politicians are not speaking out, they don't know the truth. They don't. So are these politicians siding with the penal system? Are they siding with the DOC officials and guards? And for what reason are they doing it?
I look at it as a voluntary ignorance. Because if somebody gives you an out where you can say that you don't know or provide you a degree of plausible deniability, where you can say, I looked into the situation at the time, I was misled. Well, when you turn and you look the other way willingly and voluntarily, well, you're still morally responsible for that result for anyone who holds themselves accountable. And I think a lot of politicians get so caught up in protecting their political careers, more so than protecting the rights of the people, that sometimes they lose sight of why they originally really took office in the first place. And again, and when it comes to the power of the prison system and the police department, it doesn't stop with finances. It doesn't stop with the political lens and the optics of it and what it looks like, how good it looks on paper. A lot of times, these corrupt organizations do reach the level of actual violence. I'm saying they already perpetrate violence and murder on prisoners and their victims, but to maintain that system, sometimes they resort to violence against politicians and they resort to violence against citizens, and there are people who have lost their lives fighting against the prison industrial complex. And it scares some people away. It makes some people nervous. Some people have lost their political careers over it. Eric Greitens is somebody who has pushed for prison reform in Missouri. And he just recently got cleared of his of charges that they brought against him to remove him as governor. Who are some of these people in these shadows? Politicians who have heart enough to expose them. They need to expose the people who are using these corrupt tactics and these corrupt means so that we won't end up with corrupt people in powerful positions, because corruption breeds incompetence. And I want people to take that into consideration, because corruption breeds incompetence because it actually removes the people who can competently but survive situations like this coronavirus. Right now we have a bunch of incompetent people over the CDC who don't know what they're doing, all because the people who are competent, who were in place that would know what to do in this situation with the coronavirus were removed for disagreeing with the president. Now, those corrupt people who have been put in place, they don't know how to do the job. And nobody knows what to do about this coronavirus. That's because corruption breeds incompetence. And the corruption of the justice system breeds incompetence, which increases the crime rate because nobody's doing serious justice reform. And they're attacking programs that do help people get rehabilitated because the prison system sees crime reduction as an enemy to their profit margin. People need to really, really look at these things. And that's why we have a balloon in prison population. And that's why there's resistance to the, stopping the balloon in prison population, and they're trying to expand it over into our schools with the prison fight by programs.
Yes. There's
and
so much.
It's not hopeless.
You know, you mentioned so many things that if the prisoners had a voice, they could make some really positive prison reform, goals. And who knows better than a prisoner, the one that's been in for years like yourself? Who knows better than someone like yourself to be able to work with the legislatures or work with the people, the leaders that could make these changes? And I'll tell you, when you have somebody making policies and regulations and rules, people that have never been through what it's like, I always say again, social workers, they can go and they can get that piece of paper, or substance abuse counselors. People can go to college and get that degree, but if they haven't been there, if they don't know what it's like, if they have had no family members that have been in any kind of chaotic or dysfunctional situations, they cannot help anyone else. And that's what's happening in this country. Our politicians, they think they know it all, but they don't have a clue unless they sit down and they talk with the very people they're making these policies against or for. And as far as this coronavirus, I mean, now I just read the other day where the president, they are now saying that the Democrats started this virus to do away with the president. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, these are some of the things, and I believe we just got disconnected with Reginald, and I wanted to bring all this up because there is so much injustice out there. There is so much going on. Prisoners are being abused. They're being deprived. They're being provoked. There are so many things going on in the prisons. Those who do their own internal investigations, most likely, 99% of the time, are not going to go against their own. So I believe what Reginald was saying, and I say myself, they need to have independent investigators, a committee to go in unannounced to do an investigation. The Department of Justice was speaking about going into these prisons and doing an investigation in the prisons. It has yet to be done, and I wonder why. And these are talks to let people know what's going on, to let people know what's going on in the penal system. We need to do something about all of this, because as long as it goes on, it's going to get worse. The prisons are going to get full. They're going to not only try to double-cell prisoners, but they're going to try to triple-cell them. And eventually, they're going to have foreigners. And before you know it, there's going to be gangs in these cells. And I'll tell you, it doesn't necessarily just have to be the people of color, because what's happening now is they're going against anyone, any prisoner at all. It doesn't matter, because as Madeleine Colburn said earlier, and they're making money off of the prisoners. They're making money. The more they can get into these prisons, the more money they're making, and that's why they continuously start double-selling. That's why they continuously start building more prisons. This is not a farm. It's not a cattle place where they can just put the cattle in and make money off of them. And I hope that everyone will come together and try to do something about it. Whether you make calls to your politicians in your local areas, whether you make calls in to the Department of Justice or the Attorney General's office, write letters to the media, and those are the ones you need to focus on. Contacting the media and making the media be held accountable for what they report, because what they're reporting sometimes can really be damaging to some innocent people, and can be damaging to people, families, and individuals who may have a reason for what is going on. And I'd like to have, next time, tomorrow Reggie will be on with us again, I'd like to have people call in if they have concerns or questions, if there's any way they can help. And I'd like to say one thing to advocates. Every advocate is advocating for something different. They may be advocating for their own loved ones. They may be advocating for a certain group, the wrongfully convicted, juveniles, you know, others that have gotten harsh sentences like life and life without parole. And nowadays, that's what we're seeing a lot of. But what we need to do is focus on one goal, and that is to do away with these harsh sentences. We need to be able to come together and make it so that they will only have a maximum sentence of maybe 25 or 30 years, as other countries are doing, especially when the prisoners are not terrorists, they're not serial killers. Many are wrongfully convicted.
If you would like to permanently block your number from receiving calls from this facility, press 6.
We have Reginald coming back on with us, but we cannot get him
to accept this free call, press 1. To refuse this free call, press 2.
Okay. We have to work something out with that one. But again, that's what we need to do, is we need to come together in unity across the board, across the country, all advocates, and try to focus on one thing. Because if we can focus on that limitation as to the maximum sentencing that they do, then we can start focusing on other issues from that point on. There are many prisoners in the prisons throughout the country who are committing suicide because there is no hope. There are many prisoners who are crying out for help within the penal system, and they're being deprived of that help from either politicians, from lawyers who are seeking only to service those who have the funds, large amounts of funds. And we have to have the help for these prisoners. So again, tomorrow we're going to have Reginald back on with us, and hopefully we'll have people calling in to talk about their issues, their concerns, what it is that they would like to see happen, or whatever it is that you have to talk about. Now, there was an issue that occurred in Massachusetts in the Susan Baranowski Correctional Center, which is on the internet. Most of you may have already heard about it, where some prisoners and guards got into it. Following that attack, the prison was put on lockdown after the perpetrators were transferred to other prisons. And the guards went on a rampage of unprovoked attacks on prisoners throughout. The facility was on lockdown for a month. Prisoners were beaten, noses broken, some thrown into solitary confinement, naked, without any food, without any clothing, without any soap, without anything to read or write. And some of them are still in the situation they were put in by Susan Baranowski Correctional Center guards and officials. The dogs were brought in. These are people that are just trying to serve their time, and they're being abused. And there's a lot of prisoners, and don't let the Department of Corrections or any official tell you otherwise. There are prisoners that are in these facilities that are trying so hard to take ongoing correspondence courses, higher educational correspondence courses. They're trying to work. Some of them have even gotten jobs in culinary arts and other areas. where they have been actually denied the opportunities to do these correspondence courses, some of them wanting to pay on their own, some of them where their families were willing to pay, and they're still being denied. Some of them who had gotten jobs, and officials and guards went over their heads to have those jobs taken from them. And then they say to the media, these people, these criminals in this place, these animals, they don't want to do anything. They don't want to do any education. They don't want to work. That's a lie. That is a lie. And I've worked with prisoners across the country for 20 years, and I'm hearing these things from other prisoners as well, in other states as well. We have leadership in this country right now who changes their stories so many times, who promises so much and reneges on those promises, who right now is going to try to place the blame of the coronavirus, according to what I've read, on Democrats. How in the world can Democrats go after one person when all these people around the whole world are dying? People that say one thing and they just try to divide. And these prisons, don't believe everything you're hearing. Don't believe everything you're hearing. Unless you go in or someone goes in and meets with these prisoners. There were prisoners who were in for so many different reasons, wrongful convictions, some victims before becoming offenders. Some of them who are so remorseful, some of them who are so old now, they can't do anything. Medical issues, another thing. There's a prisoner right now who is suffering from a disabled arm, a torn rotator cuff, which he has been trying to get help for almost a year, in pain, and they have denied it. He has not been able to get help for that arm. And that is a prisoner that is in solitary confinement right now, as a result of the unprovoked attacks, naked, without anything, and an arm that has been bothering him for a year. They denied. There have been other prisoners who have been denied. Diabetics who have been denied treatment, taken to the hospital. So all the taxpayers' dollars that we are putting out there, where is it going? It's going into the pockets of the wrong people because the treatment is not out there. They're not getting it. I have applications from prisoners who are crying out for help, for lawyers. They're crying out for help because their civil rights are violated. Another thing is mail. The mail is being tampered with. Prisoners are trying to file lawsuits because of the damaging effects that they are subjected to by prison guards and officials. They're trying to file lawsuits to rectify the problem. And their mail is being intercepted, incoming and outgoing. I've had an organization, I've had the same problem. Prisoners writing, periodically you get a letter from a prisoner saying they wrote five letters and no one responded. No one responded because no one received the mail. And again, as I say, mail is tampered with a lot in these prisons. So again, I'm going to ask everyone to please think about it. If you're in any advocacy group at all, try to look at these issues and try to recruit people to work. And again, I want to say one thing. American Civil Liberties Union, NAACP, even the National Action Network in some areas, they want membership dues. You call for help and they ask if you're a member. If not, you have to pay to get help. I have talked to so many people who talk about the NAACP being a member, and I ask, have they helped with your legal issues? And they say no. A lot of prisoners don't have any faith in them because they don't help. American Civil Liberties Union, if it's a lot of prisoners seeking help, class action or whatever, some of these organizations. Massachusetts Mental Health Legal Advisory Committee, volunteer lawyers, all of these facilities, all of these so-called law firms for civil rights violation, human rights violation, When you call, very rarely do you get any help. And I just want to bring that out because it's time that people know where a lot of funding prisoners are not helped as they say they are. It's a pick-and-choose situation. It's a who-you-know situation. And I am going to be signing off now, and I welcome everyone for tomorrow's session. Thank you.